From Hook and Bullet to Policy and Science, we're here to discuss and dissect all matters of importance to Montana's rugged landscape and the people and wildlife that call it home. This is Montana Untamed. As the federally protected grizzly bear continues to make its life outside of the wilderness enclaves of its recovery zones, it is met with human civilization and the problems that arise as a result. The folks whose lives and livelihood are on the line in these situations are the farmers and ranchers who work the land where civilization and wilderness meet. In 2017, Montana Fish, Wildlife, and Parks created the Prairie Grizzly Bear Team in response to the expanding grizzly bear population of the Northern Continental Divide ecosystem making its way from the mountains to the prairie. What follows is a conversation I had earlier this year with Wesley Sarmento, the head of that Prairie Bear Team. My apologies in advance for the quality of this audio on this episode. It was recorded as we bumped along a dirt road outside Conrad, Montana. So I guess, Wes, why don't you start with just like a quick description of what it is you do for Fish, Wildlife, and Parks.
Sure. So I'm a grizzly bear management specialist for Montana Fish, Wildlife, and Parks. Basically what that entails is I need to respond to and prevent human bear conflicts from occurring. And conflict response is a lot of different things. It can range from everything from cleaning up attractants, securing attractants, putting up electric fence, to trying to trap a bear, relocate a bear, or euthanize a bear if it's getting into a lot of trouble. And then preventing conflicts is usually more effective than responding to conflicts and being reactive. When we're being reactive, we're responding to one specific bear doing one thing, but then there's obviously dozens of other bears that can do the same thing. Mm-hmm. And so we always try to have permanent solutions to problems that are occurring. And so that's where a lot of the conflict prevention work comes in. So right. Putting out bear-proof garbage can or building a bear-resistant grain bin door, cleaning up grain, building electric fences around chicken coops or bone piles, cleaning up bone piles so bears aren't concentrating on dead animals that are dying naturally.
Right.
A lot of what I do is just communication and public outreach, and so a large part of my day is just being on the phone with people, letting them know what's going on, where bears are, listening to their concerns and trying to address their concerns.
So you are a bear specialist that focuses on primarily, the prairie ecosystem east of, the Northern Continental Divide ecosystem where those bears, that population of bears. So this is a relatively new, in the history of Fish, Wildlife, and Parks, this is a relatively new position, correct?
Yep, this position was created in 2017, specifically in response to the expanding grizzly bear population that's making its way out of the mountains onto the prairie.
So can you maybe explain for folks who may not be in the know what you mean by expanding grizzly bear population out of the mountains?
Sure. So when grizzly bears were listed as a threatened species in 1975, here in the Northern Rockies of Montana, we have the Northern Continental Divide ecosystem, which is Glacier National Park and the Bob Marshall Wilderness Complex. This was one of the recovery zones for grizzly bears. Over the last 30, 40 years of having those protections, grizzly bear populations have really rebounded, and they're increasing in both the numbers and now the distribution as well.
Okay.
And so that recovery zone is essentially full of bears, and so bears are expanding out from that mountainous environment onto the prairies east of the Rocky Mountains.
Right. And so
what are some of the conflicts that you see with bears out in this habitat and, you know, in this agricultural heavy area?
Some of the main complaints that I get are young and dumb bears showing up near people, showing up near houses. And a lot of the reason why these bears are showing up near people and houses is because they've been kicked off their mother at a young age, and they are naive to the fact that people are dangerous and that they should stay away and fear people. But they're also getting away from larger adult male bears that could kill these young bears. And so they're finding their way near people as actually an escape from these adult male bears that know to stay away from people. And then when they show up, when bears show up near people, they get into unsecured attractants like grain. And then we get into more serious conflicts when bears are, you know, killing chickens or attacking livestock. When livestock are attacked, we work with, we assist United States Department of Agriculture, Wildlife Services. They're actually the lead agency when it comes to livestock loss. And so we'll go out. That's more typically more of a springtime type conflict when there's a lot of young calves that are small and there's not a lot of other natural available foods available to bears. And then, of course, you know, people bumping into bears, human safety concerns, hunters in particular are most at risk and tend to bump into bears more than other people. And so trying to prevent those conflicts, we do a lot of education and outreach programs to try to keep hunters safe. And then just any recreationalists or anybody that's out on the landscape where there's bears, trying to keep people safe.
Can you talk a little bit about the people factor and kind of the sensibility of folks you work with as this new sort of normal is happening with the bears in this area?
You know, with most new things, anybody doesn't like change. It doesn't matter whether it's a biologist, a rancher, a farmer, anybody. Humans in general, it's just our nature to be kind of resistant to change, particularly if the change is something that we don't know much about. And so we have a resistance to the unknown. And grizzly bears obviously are these apex predators. They can weigh 800 pounds and they can be dangerous and they can impact livelihoods. And so there's fear of that. A lot of times the fear, it's more than what it really is. You know, there's a misconception that bears are actively going around hunting people and wanting to eat people. And that really just doesn't happen at all. But there is actual danger. You know, surprising a grizzly bear at close range is a dangerous thing. It can, people have died from that. And it's something that everybody has to be aware of as grizzly bears expand out from their traditional ranges, you know, and that's not something folks have had to worry about before. And so whenever there's a new worry, a new threat particularly, that's always gonna cause concern and consternation. But in general, most folks are pretty level-headed about it. And as they learn and as they have grizzly bears show up and start to be around, they kind of realize that the grizzly bears really don't want anything to do with people and they tend to avoid people. And they start to just know, hey, I just need to be a little bit more careful when I'm near brush. I need to make noise so I don't surprise a grizzly bear at close range. Maybe I need to throw a bear spray on my ATV or have it with me if I'm going to go out fixing fence. So in general, folks are pretty mindful of it.
How do you approach the, you know, you talked about education and informing people of the risks and the ways to coexist. How do you kind of approach producers, landowners, or even just people that live out here, and kind of help them understand the situation?
Whenever I approach anyone when it comes to grizzly bears, I put myself in their shoes. I try to think about how would I feel and think if I was this person in the situation that they're in. And so if I'm interacting with a livestock producer, I try to think about, you know, what would I think and feel if I was a livestock producer? What would I want? What would I need And I approached that the situation from that in our conversations and education in that regard. Mm-hmm.
So what are some of the, you listed off a few of them in the beginning, but maybe go into a little more detail what sort of conflict reduction measures you're implementing and you're advocating for, you know, your constituents to implement in their operations.
So one of the big programs that we've started is carcass removal programs. So on any livestock operation, there's just going to be some natural death of animals, you know, old animals, young animals that are weak, sickness comes through. It's just a normal part of any livestock operation. And traditionally what folks have done is just put dead animals in a pit in a remote part of the ranch, and that's how you dealt with carcasses. The problem with that is those carcasses then draw in a lot of bears, and it concentrates, you know, up to a dozen bears on a ranch around other livestock, and that just increases the chance of a bear interacting with an injured cow or a sick calf, and it increases that chance of livestock loss. So a big program that we've implemented is livestock carcass removal, where when someone has a dead animal, we go out, we pick up the animal, and then we remove it and take it to the landfill, which we have electric fence, so it's not available to bears. And then we're not concentrating bears on single ranches around livestock and around people. It disperses the bears out in a more natural distribution.
And is that something you and the other FWP employees, technicians do, is the actual carcass removal then?
Yep. Yep, we sure do. That's a Montana Fish, Wildlife, and Parks program here on the Rocky Mountain front. And we operate that program and fund that program.
And so landowners give you guys a call and say that, you know, they had some die-off or whatever, and then you guys just schedule a time to come.
Yep, exactly. We schedule a time to come. We come pick it up. It's best if they can load it with a tractor. That's the easiest way. And then we have a dump trailer that we haul to the landfill, and we dump it out at the landfill.
Okay, so carcass removal, that seems like a huge...
It's a big program.
Huge conflict reduction, you know, taking attractants out. What else are you guys?
We do a lot of electric fencing. Electric fencing is essential for sheep, particularly having a bedding ground where the sheep can go at night that's electrified. That's kind of the silver bullet at protecting sheep. People can still have, do and can still have sheep operations right up against the mountain front, but the way that they can have those operations successfully is by putting their sheep into an electric fence at night. That's when sheep are most vulnerable.
Okay.
The dogs help a lot too, especially during the day, and also just keeping bears away from electrified fences.
So what dogs now?
Livestock guardian dogs are effective. There's Kip. Hey, buddy. So like Anatolian Shepherds, Boz, Kangal, these kind of dog breeds have been bred for thousands of years to keep grizzlies and brown bears and wolves away from livestock. And so those dogs help keep livestock protected as well.
And you're using these dogs in a little bit different way in some cases than their traditional use. Can you tell me about that?
So we've just finished up a research project where we have tested if livestock guardian dogs are effective at not protecting livestock, but protecting people and homes and keeping bears away from attractants around people's houses. And we found that the dogs are really effective at keeping bears away from people and houses, where we've seen a significant reduction in the number of bear visits to places that have dogs versus the places that don't have dogs. And so we're hoping that that conflict prevention measure gets more interest and it gets more widespread use, because we're seeing that that's a really great way of keeping bears away from people. And it doesn't require having to maintain an electric fence and the investment and the headache that goes into fencing. It's just another dog, and most people already have dogs. There's a common misconception that
livestock guardian dogs are aggressive with people or aggressive with other dogs, and that's really not the case from what we've found. They're great with children, they're great with people, they're great with other dogs. And so it's just been a really awesome tool at keeping bears away from people. Hmm. And electric fencing is a bread and butter kind of tool in the toolbox. It's also not only good for sheep, but chickens. Chickens are highly vulnerable to grizzly bears, and most coops aren't strong enough to keep a bear out if a bear wants in.
Is the thing with chickens that they're enclosed, and so if a bear did get into the enclosure, they're just sitting ducks?
Chickens? They're just not quick, and they're not smart, and so bears can get in there and really slaughter chickens. They produce a lot of scent, too, and so it's a huge draw for bears. They can bring them in from really far away. Bees are the same way. It's just a really vulnerable animal that's easy to protect with a cheap electric fence. So most bee yards, you know, it's thousands of dollars worth of bees and honey that's in one little small area, and you can just put up a $400 electric fence and it protects all of those bees mm-hmm. from getting killed by bears.
So are there other conflict reduction measures and programs that you guys are implementing? We've got carcass removal, electric fencing, the use of livestock guardian dogs.
Hazing is also a really common technique that we've started a strong hazing program, aversive conditioning, where if a bear is seen in an area, we run out there and we chase the bears, we shoot projectiles at them, we chase them with drones or Airedale bear dogs. And this helps teach bears that humans are dangerous and to fear people and to stay away from people. And now landowners and members of the public can also haze bears. So the U.S. Fish and Wildlife Service, the federal agency that oversees grizzly bear management, has put out guidelines that says that members of the public can engage in responsible hazing of grizzly bears to get them away from homes and people and livestock. And responsible means that the bear is not going to be ran excessively and it's not going to be injured, because they are a protected species. You can't injure grizzly bears or run them excessively.
So is that a new tool afforded you guys with that change in regulation?
Within the last few years, it's been made explicitly clear that people can haze grizzly bears. Hmm.
So that seems like, so those first few seem to fall in kind of a proactive approach. Mm-hmm. And like the hazing seems to fall into kind of a reactive approach. Is that a fair?
It's a little bit of both, actually, because a lot of times when we see bears and we haze them, they haven't caused a conflict yet.
Okay.
And so we're going out and we're proactively teaching these bears to be afraid of people so they don't show up near people later on. And it's a, not only is it a, we're immediately moving bears away from an undesirable location near people, but then we're hoping for the longer term behavioral modification called aversive conditioning, where bears learn to fear people.
So there's the four C's of conflict reduction, and one of those four C's is lethal means.
Yep.
What does it take for a bear, for you guys to get to a point where you make the decision that this bear, where lethal means needs to be taken to?
There's a lot of variables that go into every response that we do, whether it's lethal or non-lethal. The age of the bear, the status of the bear, the sex of the bear, the history of what the bear's done. Is it chronically causing issues, or is this the first time the bear showed up near people? Have we already tried other things like relocation? Have we hazed the bear before? So there was a collared yearling just around this area, is living along this canal here.
Which is where are we?
We are east of Valier.
Okay.
This collared yearling showed up near a house, and we tried hazing it, kept coming back near the house, and so we ended up proactively catching that bear and then relocating it. It ended up coming back down and continued the behavior of coming near houses, living in people's shelter belts, and showing a lack of fear of people and habituation to human infrastructure. And so we haze that time between us and members of the public. We haze that bear probably 10 times and its behavior wasn't changing. And so we ended up euthanizing that bear because it was on the wrong trajectory. We've got plenty of bears that are doing good things and staying away from people. And then if a bear is consistently causing issues and causing human safety concerns, that's when we look at euthanasia, or if it's causing chronic livestock loss.
Mm-hmm. So I guess I didn't mean to cut you off there and change tracks here. Were there other conflict prevention measures that you'd like to tell me about?
There's also, we use scare devices quite a bit, and they're basically motion-activated lights and sirens that we set up on attractants that bears are finding. So things like grain spills, it's one of our first things that we go to try to get bears to leave grain spills, or things like apple trees. And it works about half the time. And a lot of times if we can just solve the issue with that, that's the most time effective and cost effective method of resolving a complaint.
This is like something that makes a loud noise and flashes lights or something.
Sirens and flashes.
Okay.
So that's another conflict prevention tool that we have in the toolbox. We have all sorts of tools in the toolbox.
So do you like grizzly bears?
Yeah. I do like grizzly bears. They're a cool animal. You know, large, powerful animal, intelligent. They're neat to see, interesting behavior. Obviously, Seth said, is it Montana without grizzly bears? Mm-hmm. They're the Montana state animal. Charles Russell used to paint them. It's a part of who we are as Montanans, having grizzly bears. But we just need to make sure that they're not causing problems or human safety issues.
Are we arriving at
the bone pit?
The bone pit here?
Yeah.
All right, I'll kill this. So I guess I'm wondering what people need to know about how the grizzly situation out here in this kind of prairie agricultural ecosystem, you know, is different than, you know, maybe the preconceptions that folks have about grizzly bears in Montana. Mm-hmm.
So obviously out here, bears are around people all the time. This is an agricultural landscape. It's not the prairie that Lewis and Clark came through almost 200 years ago, or over 200 years ago now. It's developed. There's families everywhere. There's houses everywhere. People have shelter belts near their houses and cover and berries and tractants. And so it's not just a wild landscape free of people. And so the bears, they're around people all the time. They're around livestock. And it's different than, like, say, the Bob Marshall Wilderness, which is public land. It's all natural. And the bears basically exist up there, and the people are the visitors. Down here, it's the people live here year-round, and it's more like the bears are the visitor here.
Well, that's kind of interesting way of putting it.
They come down from the mountains. You know, most of the bears still den up in the mountains for the winter. And they come down here during the spring and stay down here all summer and fall and then go back to the mountains.
So what are some of the big hurdles and challenges of managing this bear population as opposed to other bear populations?
The agriculture attractants are really difficult to secure. You know, when you're transporting grain and loading and unloading grain from bins and moving them between trucks, there's going to be grain spills. And we're talking about spills that are thousands and thousands of pounds worth of grain.
And you can't just slap an electric fence around every grain spill and call it good. First off, the farmers, they need access to the bins, and fences get in their way, and they can't just have a fence in their way when they need to get in and out of these bins. They're working round the clock, they're harvesting through the night, and so they're busy and they don't need more obstacles in doing their job.
Right, like electric fencing off of all of their bin sites is just not functional.
It's not feasible, yeah. They need consistent access with large equipment, trucks, tractors, loaders, and the fences would just get in the way.
So explain why grain, you know, there's a conception out there that bears are meat eaters, right? Mm-hmm. Big, hungry, carnivorous predators. And that is not the case.
That's not the case at all. They're very much omnivores. They eat a wide variety of things. Insects, they eat a lot of ants, roots. Right now they're eating almost entirely choke cherries, which we have really abundant choke cherry crops out here. And grasses in the spring, particularly when the grasses are really lush and green, they'll eat a lot of grasses. Right out of winter, they'll dig up biscuit root and other roots where there's a lot of nutrients stored in those tubers. And then as the fall progresses, or the spring progresses, they will start eating some meat, and they'll get into fawns and calves and stuff like that. And it's a really varied diet. It's not just one thing.
So a big old pile of grain to them is...
Oh yeah, it's easy food, easy protein. And a lot of these crops are cultivated specifically for high protein content, and that's what the bears are looking for, is high protein. So here we have an electrified bee yard. There's a lot of bear activity around here. The bee producers do put up some of their own fences, but they're short on time too, and if we're getting a lot of bear activity, then we'll go out and put up a temporary fence just to help those guys out.
So you say there's a lot of bear activity in this area or around beehives is what you mean?
In this area generally, but bears really do key in on these beehives because it's an easy meal, a high calorie meal. The honey, and also just the larvae of the bees, they'll eat a lot of the larvae.
Let's go check it out. Okay, so I guess forgive me if this is kind of too heady of a question, but do you sense that, like, this, that there's kind of an irony that these bears, you know, 200 years ago when Lewis and Clark came through, these bears were prolific in this area. They lived here for however many thousands, tens of thousands of years and adapted here. And that there's kind of this sense of irony that they're back here and it's kind of new to us as, you know, Western settlers, but it's not really new at all in the timeline of natural history.
Yeah, it is kind of ironic. And, you know, the recovery of this predator is requiring us to relearn ancient practices. You know, in 99% of human history, we've had to live with large, dangerous animals. It's only in the last few hundred years that we've had the technology and capability to really eliminate so many species to the point where we haven't had to live with them. Mm-hmm. And now in the recent years, they're rebounding because of, you know, successful recovery, and we're having to relearn how people lived with predators 300 years ago, 400 years ago,
right,
and how we lived with them throughout all of human history.
So what's like the big end of the day, the big picture goal for, you know, your, you know, bear management approach?
For my specific program, the overall goal is to keep people safe and minimize the problems that bears cause and the concerns that bears cause. And when you do that, you increase tolerance for the species. People will be more willing to have bears around. and that's better for the species itself.
Mm-hmm. How have you seen that tolerance change since you've been in this role and since FWP has, you know, put forth resources to manage bears out here?
There's some folks that the tolerance hasn't changed at all, and they've, you know, they live up on the mountain front and they still don't want bears and they still think there's too many bears. But for the majority of people, when they see that we come out and we resolve problems and we remove problem animals or we resolve issues through non-lethal methods like guard dogs, then the tolerance increases and they see that coexistence is possible.
Hmm. What is it, what does a situation look like when you get a call that there's a bear where it's not supposed to be or doing what it's not supposed to be? What's kind of the protocol?
Protocol is to try to get as much important information as quickly as possible from the call and then get out there as quickly as possible. Quick response is expected of us and it's needed of us when there's a dangerous animal around. We have to get out there quickly to resolve the concern.
Mm-hmm. I guess you have any final thoughts?
I think we covered it pretty well. I'm sure tonight I'll be laying in bed saying, I wish I would have said this or I wish I would have said that.
Mm-hmm.
But, you know, having bears out here, people are having to live with them, and we got to listen to their concerns and address people's concerns if we're gonna have bears on the landscape. And what most people are okay with having bears on the landscape, they just don't want the bears near their homes and they don't want the bears causing economic damage. And those are both reasonable requests, and that's stuff that we can address and we can minimize.
Mm-hmm. Well, thanks.
Thank you, sir.
Montana Untamed is a podcast from the newsrooms of Lee Enterprises Montana newspapers. Visit any of our websites or subscribe wherever podcasts are found.